Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to your weekly dose. I'm Wajid. I've got Hanif over there. Hanif, how are you doing?
Not bad, yourself?
I'm good. How's as normal now, we have a special guest. I would like to introduce you one of the hottest prospects in the country. He's a man who is going to be challenging for the British title very, very soon. And for all intents and purposes, he could be a world champion very soon as well. I give you the one, the only, Zahid, the Magic Man Hussein. Zahid, how are you doing, mate?
I'm good, how are you?
I'm good. Thank you very much for being here with us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
No, no worries. And I'd just like to start off with, you know, talk a little bit about yourself, really. How you got involved, background and stuff like that.
Yeah, to be honest, as a kid, I always wanted to be a footballer. And before that, I actually wanted to be a wrestler. But my brother started boxing, and he used to come out sometime with his boxing gloves and equipment and stuff. And I just wanted to go one time, and I woke up early. I used to catch him on a Saturday morning, waking up to go to the gym. So I thought, yeah, I know what time he wakes up now, so I'll wake up that time. I won't ask him though, I'll just go next to him, you know, I was shy to ask.
Yeah.
And then he asked me himself, and I said, yeah, I'll go. And I gave it a try. It was very tough, to be fair. I didn't really enjoy as much as football, but I went back once a week, and then eventually started going 2, 3, 4 times a week. And then now I'm in love with the sport.
Fair enough. It's always nice to find something else. And yeah, I got it from the sounds of it. It's not like something you fell in love with straight away like some people do.
Yeah, you're right. Also keeps you occupied, busy, off the streets, and keeps you wise as well. And you know, you're meeting a lot of people.
So how long have you been in the sport for then?
I started at 12 when I started going with my brother.
Right.
I properly stuck at it, I say, when I was 16. But even then, you know, 16, going to college, you know, meeting new friends and, you know, yeah, going out
course,
and stuff.
Of course,
yeah.
Enjoying the younger life.
Yeah, enjoying the younger life. I knew, you know, I have to, you know, leave that behind and stay in the gym. Probably realised when I was about 18 and I stuck at it.
So towards the end of college, when people were going on to university.
All that stuff, yeah. I didn't go to university though.
No. Listen, you don't need to go to university.
Nah, you're right.
Make a very good career for yourself.
Yes, I fully agree.
I'll be honest, as a man who went to university, the job I'm in, if I'd just gone straight into an apprenticeship, I'd have been just as good.
Well, I used to work with my dad, and it was a takeaway right outside the university, Leeds University. I used to, you know, like sometimes the older guys used to come, that like, used to go to that university, they're like, you know, 30, 40.
Yeah.
Then they come back, you know, just to reminisce or whatever.
Yeah,
and then, you know, I speak to them and they say, oh, you know, we used to go to that uni. I say, oh, did you? What did you do? And then whatever they did, I say, okay, what are you doing now? Something completely different.
Well, that's true.
yeah.
But
it's still an adventure, though, isn't it, when you go in?
Of course. What gym are you currently at now? What gym did you start at? Why? And if you did change, why any changes?
Yeah. I started at Rick Manners School of Boxing. It wasn't doing many amateur bouts, so I moved to Bermatoss for a bit. I've had a few amateur fights there, but I didn't feel like the boxing was, you know,
to understand it.
Yeah, so then I went back to Rick, and there's more like a family gym there, but then obviously I turned pro with Rick, and then also now last year I moved from Rick because I wasn't really feeling the training and stuff, you know, it wasn't evolving. So I moved with my other coach, who was also training us at Rick's, but we moved over now. At the moment we don't have a gym, but we use, you know, Exercise for Less. They've got boxing in there and bags, so, and plus everyone gives us our space, so it's like our gym now, to be honest.
Fair enough. And how long have you been there for, sorry?
Over a year now. Last year, like February time or something.
Do you wanna give the name of your coach that you moved with?
His name's Keith Walton, yeah. He's about 31, 32, young, hungry himself.
Are you his main prospect then, or does he have a couple?
There's three of us. There's me. There's a lad called Ishmael Davis and another lad called Justin Newell. He only wants to train us three at the moment because he also works. So you know, there's a lot of people that have actually, you know, seen his potential as a trainer and I've asked, you know, to train for him, to train them, but.
Yeah.
He's not really got the time, so just focus on those three at the moment.
Fair. So let's talk about your amateur career. For someone who was in the boxing, you didn't have a lot of amateur fights compared to some people. I think it was only 23 amateur fights.
Yeah. Roughly around 23, I think. The gym that I was at didn't have an amateur boxing license, so it couldn't really get many amateur fights in because you had to go through other gyms to do it. So
yeah.
That's the reason why I moved to Bermatoff Boxing Club to, you know, get the amateur bouts in.
Yeah.
But obviously the training was not at the standard that I liked it to be at, so I went back. But when I went back, then, you know, my coach got through to another guy at another gym,
right,
with the license.
Yeah.
And from there, I started to get regular amateur bouts. So I got most of them when I come back.
When you came back?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, that's after they got the license and everything.
Yeah, everything, yeah.
You from the sounds of it, you seemed very, very comfortable at that gym. That seemed to be
it was home. Don't get me wrong, it was like home. My brother trained there, even family. A lot of my cousins gone down there, even for fitness and stuff. So it was like home. Everybody you met as well, you make friends there. And,
if you're there for as long as you were, you become furniture almost.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, yeah, like furniture, exactly.
So while you were there then, obviously completely focusing on your career, do you chip in with the youngsters that come in? Do you look at maybe potential prospects? Did you look at potential prospects while you were there? Or?
Yeah, of course. Sometimes the coach himself can be, you know, a bit busy, or the class can be busy. You know, he'll ask for a hand. And then you sometimes also take over the class with him, you know, train the kids and whatnot. You see a lot of potential. There's loads of kids with potential. Just the hardest part is when they're growing up.
Yeah,
you know, staying in. There's so many of them, I'm telling you now. Like, you look at me and think, wow. And then them same ones now are probably
On the road
somewhere, yeah. You know.
It's a shame that there's so much.
Yeah, like, even one of my own cousins, he started with me, well, a bit after me, but I was 5 years older than him, and he was sparring with me.
Right.
And, you know, holding his own. Mm. He was very, very talented, and he was, you know, the family were talking about him more than they were talking about me.
Yeah.
But he obviously got distracted in, like I said, with his friends and stuff, and he stopped.
Does he ever look at you and think?
Yeah, he's a big support of mine now as well.
Oh, that's good.
He brings all his lads and that. He does look at me now, and sometimes the family have a go at him as well and say, oh, you know,
This could have been you,
yeah. You waster. And all that. But yeah.
So you had your amateur fights.
Yeah.
What was it that made you push to go pro?
More because of the style of the amateur style. It was very quick. I was more of somebody that likes to take his time. And plus, the gym we were at was more of a, you know, professional training side, more than an amateur. You know, like, more trained you to be a professional boxer than an amateur boxer. Two different games, because amateurs was a point system back then. I don't think it is no more, but back then it was a point system. And obviously pros is a bit different. You know, you take your time, whatnot. And I preferred it. And I think I got to national the first. When I went back to the gym, I got a national final. Got to the national final, but they disqualified me five and got to fight because some issue with the person that we'd done the license through. Said I don't box for him.
Right. Okay.
I don't know why he did that. Probably, I don't know, jealousy because we didn't rep his club. I don't know. There's a lot of politics.
So sorry, you got your license approved for the fight.
So not from my actual gym, because obviously they don't have the license. Answers, so we went through somebody else that we actually, you know, we sort of get on with.
Yeah.
And they said, yeah, we will put him through to our gym. And then got to the final, and then my coach gets a call saying, oh, this was like a week before we got into the final. So we got into the final, but a week before the final was set.
So you've done all your prep.
Yeah, done all the training. I beat everyone that come my way. And then, my trainer got called just a week before the final saying, oh, he can't box in the final unless you could get him unless he gets signed for another gym, because we've been told that he don't train at this gym and this boxer don't train him no more. And, you know, he basically took him off the card. So we was a bit confused, and we had 24 hours to get, to sign with somebody. We couldn't. So then I didn't get to fight in that.
Were you facing someone from, were you facing one of their boxers from
that particular gym? No, not even. No, they faced somebody from London, because obviously the group stage start from Leeds, and then it goes to Manchester. You beat the person in Manchester, then you're in the final. Then obviously London have their own little thing, and the winner of
there,
yeah, and the winner of there, then you know, you battle it out between each other.
What was the tournament? Was it just like
a national amateur?
Amateurs.
Yeah, right, yeah.
Okay. That's how you got your first taste of boxing politics, even.
And the amateurs, and then obviously the next year I did it again. We went through somebody else now. It was a fine. everything. Everything was good. Went to the final, got beat.
It happens.
Yeah, yeah.
It's all good experience.
Yeah, definitely.
Just talk about your first pro fight. What was the feelings? What was the emotions? How amped were you?
Very, very pumped. Was nervous, and it was a bit emotional as well, because it was like a dream, part of a dream that's come true.
Yeah.
And you know, I remember being in the changing room. Sorry, not changing room. Just before coming out with the ring entrance tune coming on and stuff. I remember my head just getting quite. I didn't let the tears out, but I was getting emotional. I'm thinking, yeah, this is it now. This is what I've been wanting to do, like, for how many years? And that was the day.
Can you talk to us about the journey of once you became pro, the things you have to do just to get to your pro fight? Because you have to do quite a few things, don't you?
Yeah.
So you got medicals, you got a ticket. Yeah. Did you have to sell tickets as well?
Yeah. That's a nightmare. The preparations were, in fact, you thought more about, you know, having to sell the tickets than you did, or what you can do in your training session, and, you know, preparing for the fight. And this is how every pro comes up, you know, with not really a big amateur background. Even someone who do have a big amateur background still have to worry about the tickets that they're selling. That was a major part of their journey, because selling tickets was hard. And obviously, if you're not selling tickets, you don't fight, because without money coming into the show, they're not going to put you on.
I think what put a lot of people off, since we've been learning about boxing and what fighters do, is it's not cheap, is it?
No.
You know, you got the cheaper tickets at 25, 30 quid, and then you've got ringside tickets.
60, 70 quid.
And I've seen £100 tickets
for
guys that are up and coming. Now, I understand why you do it, but you know when the level of opponent is not at your level?
Exactly.
How do you see that as a boxer? Because I see some boxers where they'll face someone who's not at their level and they'll knock them out within 2 minutes.
I know exactly what you're saying, and you see what it is, the boxing getting popular in England now. You know, obviously I've been Anthony Joshua and so many other world champions since Eddie Hearn's took over, been so popular, and so it's getting more fans, and the fans are getting more clued on now. You can't really do that, like, you know, they call journeymen that you're those opponents.
Yeah.
Their opponents that are there, don't get me wrong, they're there to get beat, but don't get me wrong, when they do get there, if they do have a chance, they see an opening, they'll take it, because they have caused upsets many times before. So you know, it's not something you go to sleep on, but still, you're, you know, 80% chance you should be beating them.
But those upsets are few and far between, though, aren't they? Because most of these journeymen, they have about 12 wins, but some are rocking 73, 100 plus losses, aren't they?
Of course. So obviously now the fans are, you know, your people that come support, they're locking on now. You're like in your 6th, 7th fight, and you know, they're not seeing much difference with the opponents, you know. So it's hard to even sell them, but obviously you're like in an apprenticeship. You can't just go in straight to the lions den and fight, you know, somebody that's, you know, you're learning yourself, you're young, you're whatever. But I say, like, mine, you know, how things went, I didn't really, you know, I think I was 13 fights before I even got a proper opponent, which I, you know, I didn't really want to do that, but that's how the manager said it, so.
Was that George Brennan?
Yeah, he was the first one with not the winning record. I fought somebody before him with a winning record, but he was the first one that was there
like
for
like a decent, like a good 50, prospect. 50
yeah, 50-55, basically, yeah.
That was for the central area, So, do you have a say in the opponent? Do you, like, have a say when you want to step up the class in opponents, or is it more your trainers and your coaches kind of pick the fights for you?
The trainer knows what's best for you and stuff, so you do have a say, don't get me wrong, like, you know, or, you know, can we do this, you know, and they'll say, okay, well, you know, we'll do it bit by bit, whatnot. So you do have your say, but, you know, I were nagging, saying, come on, can we get some up better now, you know, this whatnot. And that's when we got George. You know, I said it from, I think, probably my 8th or 9th fight, but I did have a lot of hand injuries as well at the time. So
yeah, for people at home who can't see, Zaid has a couple of big scars on his right hand, so it looks like you've been under the knife quite a bit, or been in a heck of a lot of knife fights.
So that's another reason why sometimes what people won't know, why the opponents aren't getting stepped up, because obviously I was fighting for about probably 3, 4 or maybe even 5 fights with half a right hand, basically.
Let's talk about the injury, actually. That looks like an extensive operation, was it? I presume. What was the damage to the right hand?
It was a perfect sweet shot to the head. It's just hairline fracture. And the actual fracture itself is called a boxer's fracture.
Right.
It's quite common in the, you know, from to boxer's hands.
Yeah.
So I was back and forth with the doctors and hospitals, whatnot, doing it through NHS. They weren't doing nothing. They were just, you know, trying things out, trying basically long out the operation, not do the operation.
Yeah.
So in that time, I couldn't waste my, I didn't want to spend a lot of money on it at first, because I'm already spending money on, you know, building my career and stuff.
Yeah.
So I thought, you know, we'll just tick away with fights,
yeah,
you know, have like 6 rounders a year, you know, somebody that I could easily beat, whatnot. But the crowd's getting bored now, and I'm feeling it for my sport as well, because half of my family as well, so, yeah, you know, can't just get them to spend their hard-earned money on just doing it. So I thought, you know, I'm going to get the hand sorted straight away and go get myself out there now in the mix. And I did. My first fight was George Brennan.
How long were you on the shelf when you had the operation to the hand?
I got it done last year, January, and I started training again. I started doing a bit of training in February, but not punching with it. And I started punching, I think, at the end, back end of March, but very lightly. And even then, so I boxed with it. I boxed, I think, September. So
you were out for 9 months.
Yeah,
then,
9 months, yeah. So even in that September, I still damaged it a bit.
Right.
But now in the last fight I had, it was perfect.
Did you feel the difference in the hand after the operation? Like when you started building up, did you?
Yeah,
could
definitely.
Could you see a strength difference, a durability difference?
Definitely, because before I was feeling sharp pains, you know, from every time I was using it.
Yeah.
Well, as I was recovering from the operation, don't get me wrong, sometimes it was hurting, but it wasn't that same sharp pain where, you know, there's an issue. Could tell it's just normal, you know, something's healing.
Yeah.
So it wasn't too bad, and then now it's perfect.
It must have been incredibly frustrating, though.
Yeah, definitely.
Just because you're very, very early. You're still very early into your career.
Yeah.
You know, there's definitely prospect there.
Yeah.
You're looking forward to the new better fighters
yes,
of your caliber.
Yeah, yeah.
And you're held back behind this injury.
Yeah.
Talk about the mental side. How was that mentally draining on you? And what things did you do to kind of get over any sort of mental doubts you had?
Basically, when I actually got the operation done, I remember sitting at home. I was sitting downstairs. I think a week or two into the recovery, the British board have put out for me to fight for the English title.
Yeah.
And it had to be by April or something. No way I was going to be, you know, fit to fight. And I was, you know, buzzing that, you know, that I'm known now, that they know that I'm here, that, you know, they put me out for a title or whatnot. So I was mandatory. Basically, the person had to fight me and the person had to fight for this title between that time. So obviously, we told them we was injured. So then, obviously, they let that one go. I think that person then moved on to someone else. And then they put me out to fight another guy for that title within probably, I think, a month or two after. But still, there was no way I was going to be ready. So even, you know, then we have to postpone that. And then, you know, they sort of put me on the shelf, then the British board.
Nice.
What are your thoughts on, just quickly going back to your amateur background, because you turning pro, there's a lot of you, a lot of boxers out there from across the country, but we don't see you doing what some of the arrogant boxers do, you know, to sell a fight.
Yeah, yeah.
Why do you think you guys don't do that? Because you guys need the fans at the beginning anyway.
You're right.
Have you ever done it? Have you gone to a opponent? You know what? It's going to be a scrap.
It's also like you say, you know, when you know there's a decent opponent there that, you know, that has a background of, you know, of winning fights and stuff, that's when you sort of put it on them. But, you know, when you're fighting the journeymen and stuff, you don't need to shout them and stuff. What's the point of, you know, what you're building up, really?
But you're building yourself up, though.
You're right. There is.
I'm just saying, because you don't see it. So it's not only you. We've had people here who, you know, we've had Olympians and British and English champions. But, you know, they don't use social media like, you know what, I'm going to knock this guy out.
Is
what you're going to see. And it just surprises me they don't use social media like that.
Yeah,
Is it because they're thinking, oh, we'll do the Khabib thing, we'll be humble, and, you know?
No, it's not even that, you know. It's more of the, you know, there's a thing like where you say it's forced, you know, when you're forcing it, and you could tell it's forced, like, oh, you could tell, look at him, he's just trying to hype himself, you could tell he's forcing it. It just don't look good. Like, if you're fighting a journeyman, I can't, you know, be serious and say, oh, I'm going to knock you out, you know. have the school face and stuff. I just can't keep my straight face. I won't be able to keep a straight face, keep it, what look real. But when you've actually got an opponent that, you know, that's doing something on this side, and he's saying, no, he's going to knock you out, and you're saying, yeah, I'm going to knock you out. You're both saying to each other, and it actually winds each other, you actually wind each other up, and it's more serious, and then the shoving and pushing, all sorts will happen. So when you're more in the mix, that's where you see it.
So you need the guy to be at your level before you...
Yeah, because even if you look at, for example, all the boxers coming up, when they're even fighting these fighters, even you don't even see them mouthing it off or whatever, you know, they just stay quiet, get on with it, do the job, and that's it, let the fist do the talking. But as soon as you get, you know, a live opponent, that's when all the talking will probably come out.
No, it just surprises me that you don't do it early on, you know, yeah. Just to get the fans.
I think now the best way is obviously before you get to that level, mouthing it off, people more do their stuff on social media than, you know, just show the training and all that stuff, you know, punching the bags and that. That's the only way people are doing it now. But I know exactly what you're saying, I know.
It's just that what differentiates you from another boxer that, you know, early on, you're not early on in your career, you know, you've had 15 bouts, you've won 14 of them,
yeah.
But it's just, you know, I just want to see something different. I want him to come out there, you know, yeah.
I've come out in different ways. When you're saying different, like I've come out in a segue.
Have you?
Yeah, I've come out in a segue. I've come out with, you know, certain tunes that will...
Have you come out dancing?
Not dancing. I don't want to trip. But my main was probably, I've come out in mask, you know, stuff like that. Okay. That get the crowd, you know, thinking, oh, who's he? And, you know, all that stuff. But the segue one probably were the best one, yeah, but nobody had it on footage.
How was your balance on that?
Yeah, I did practice before. I had a good practice on it.
My cousin's got one. I thought I'd take a shot at it over Christmas, yeah. And it wasn't.
When I remember first getting on it, I was all over the place. I thought, ooh, I got an idea here. If I get good at this, I'm going to come out on it in my next fight.
I'm surprised your trainer wasn't screwing at the end.
Nah, he was, but I just said, nah, I'm doing it, man. Selling myself, you know, so you got to sell yourself. But after that, people didn't ask me about the fight. They were asking me, oh, how much you get them for?
So you were discussing that you were mandatory for the English title.
Yeah.
Are you still mandatory, or do you have to fight a couple? Do you have to get a couple fights in before
you're mandatory again? Since then, I fought George Brennan for the Central Area title at that weight, and then I was making the weight easy, and my coach said, you know, let's try drop down the weight, because these guys are at that weight are coming into fight with me, coming into the fight at like 10 stone after the weighing, because you get weighed day before.
Oh, yeah.
So you're weighing in at 9 stone, and they're putting on a stone, and me, I'm actually a naturally smaller guy in like body wise and stuff. I'm only putting on about 5-6 pounds after the weighing. So he's saying,
sorry, just for everyone out there, you went from featherweight to super bantamweight.
Yeah, which is one below
my
last fight. Yeah. So that's 8 stone 10, so 9 stone to 8 stone 10.
Yeah.
I even made that nice, you know. Didn't struggle.
You're the same weight as Kesar Shark, aren't you?
I think he fights at Super Bantam, yeah.
Would you take a fight with him?
We're very good friends, and we spoke about this before, so...
And what's the answer?
We said, no, we won't fight each other. There's different routes to take. Maybe when we've taken all the routes and, you know, beating everybody and, you know, at them routes, and then there's only us two to fight, why not? We could have, a nice little fight at the end of our careers or whatnot. That'd be nice, you know, for both to make some money. Celebrate after, but there won't be no bad blood between us, don't we?
There's never no bad blood, but no. I'm just thinking.
But I think, to be honest, Kez is a bit of a broader guy. He might even move up in weight at some point in his career.
Mm. No, I'm just thinking if, you know, wouldn't mind seeing that.
We might spar sometimes. You can watch. You can come down and watch that.
I might have to.
Might be the closest thing we get for a number of years to be
honest. Yeah, definitely.
Would you, if a fight like someone like Kez or someone did come up, you know, do you have to take into consideration the friendship, or do you think, you know what, it's a business, we got to fight?
Don't get me wrong, in some cases it is a business, but obviously, like, me and Kez have been tight from, can't remember, I think when I was 18 years old, you know, it's almost 10 years now, you know, we spoke on the phone, you know, because I dropped down weight, and he said, oh, you moved down to that weight. Like, yeah, you know, we spoke between ourselves, like, you know, we won't fight each other, that's, you know, unless, you know, it's got to be someone really big to fight for.
Yeah.
Cause, you know,
if the money was right,
not even just the money, it's like more of like, you know, there's got to be at least some sort of major title on the line to fight for. If it's just a normal fight, or, you know, you two are, you know, you should fight each other, then nah.
So the reason why I ask you is because, say for example, you fought someone who's up and coming, doing really well, and imagine you beat that person.
Yeah.
It puts you in the mix for a British title or an English title, doesn't it?
Yeah,
because you know you've had 15 fights now.
Yeah.
So you should be up there. So I'm assuming you're doing eight to ten rounds.
Doing 10 rounds.
Rounds now. So you're ready.
Yeah, definitely.
So you're ready. So the journeyman thing is in the past
now.
Yeah,
that's in the past.
So surely in the next couple of days, it's going to be, you're going to be going for the British title, sorry, the English title, then the British title.
I was just saying to him earlier before we got on, it could even just jump straight to the British or the Commonwealth title as well, because there's not so many people in this weight class that are really challenging up there, you know, at the top, you know, I'm not even in the super bantamweight ranking yet, Brad Foster's one. He just come out of nowhere and, you know, beat somebody, you know, it's a more of an easier route than the featherweight, so, you know, it could go straight to the British, you know, it just depends how the, you know, how your manager sorts you out, you know, to put a word out there, and then, you know, it could be mandatory for it.
How many fights do you think you're away from a British title?
Could be any time, you know, any time.
Couple of fights or your next fight?
My next fight, I'm just gonna get one out there just to get me flowing.
Okay.
But after that, could be anything. The last fight was meant to be for a Commonwealth title eliminator, but the lad that won, he's not even fight for it, so I don't know what's going on there. But yeah.
So he's not fighting for the Commonwealth title.
Yeah. Well, he didn't because they just boxed the guy who had the Commonwealth title. Just boxed that Brad Foster and got beat.
Right.
But I thought, you know, that would have been Razak fighting that guy who fought Brad Foster.
Let's talk about your loss for a minute then.
Yeah.
First blemish on the card.
Yeah.
Do you think you won the fight, or do you think he?
No, I'm not gonna even just say, because it's me. I personally thought I won. Even though we went into the fight knowing, you know, we're probably going to be, you know, 2 points down, 2 rounds down, because it's his hometown, his coaches and his promoters that put on the show.
Right.
So, but we went in there and we was actually comfortably beating him. And then even when the fight was over, I was buzzing inside, you know, I didn't think twice of, you know, being close or up. I went to the corner, put my hands up, whatnot. And then I just had this weird feeling, you know, when they put us in and the referee got in between us, holding our hands, right? And the announcer was, you know, doing whatever. And I just had this little feeling thinking, I'm going to get robbed here, you know. I just had this feeling. Even his crowd was so loud when they first come in, when he walked in, sorry, because it was obviously hometown, whatever. Yeah. They were loud. And then at the end of the fight, his crowd was quiet. Yeah. Mine was loud because we were winning. You know, obviously they, you know, they come in the ring jumping up and down at first. And then when the fight was over, his brother come in the ring and, you know, head down, you know, just clapping. But we didn't get the decision then. And then
do you remember what the scorecard was, sir?
90s. They gave him basically, I think, how's it work? Yeah, they gave him 6 rounds. They gave me 4 rounds.
Right.
Referee was not fair in the fight as well. Howard Foster is known for being robbing fighters and stuff. You know, the Carl Froch, George Rose fight. I don't know if you ever watched it. Yeah. You know about that. That's the same referee.
Yeah. the first one. Yeah, the first one.
Yeah, like, he wasn't fair in the fight. You know, every time he was always saying, "Oh, stop holding him," when there was clear times where he was coming forward to me and grabbing me, and I'm like, you know, my hands are out here. I'm like, look, it's not me. And then he's punching me in the back of the head. And this was like in the second round, the referee gave him a warning for punching me in the back of the head, saying, if you do it one more time, I'm going to take a point off you. And then he's done it constantly throughout the fight. Not one point was taken off him. Then my coach even said to him, you know, at the end of one of the rounds, the referee comes to your corner and he's saying, "Oh, you're holding." And then my coach said, "What about him hitting him back at the head?" And he's just like this. I didn't see it.
Are you aware of who referees these fights before you take the fight once it's announced?
No. Right, I think at the, you know, the huge Las Vegas and all that stuff.
You
get a heads up on who the officials are going to be, but
it's
the day of the fight.
Yeah, it's the day of the fight. You don't know what's going on.
Have you asked for a rematch?
Well, we have asked him after that straight away, you know, whilst he's in the ring. I said, make sure you win that title and give me a rematch. And he said, yeah, no worries. You know, we'll definitely give you the rematch. You know, that was a good fight, whatnot. You know, had the crowd bouncing, to be fair. But
where was that fight?
Sheffield.
Okay.
Rotherham, sorry. And then yeah, I've not heard not since.
You're not shy for fighting away from home.
Nah,
you've done that quite a few times.
My coach is calling me. What does he call me now? Oh yeah, on the road fighter. Because yeah, that's what when you're not fighting on, you know, when you're not fighting in your home turf, it's called you a road fighter. So he's calling me a road warrior. Sorry, that's a. My coach calls me a road warrior.
You're not afraid?
Nah.
That's the best way to go, though.
I bring the same amount of crowd and stuff. I'm happy to, as long as I know my, I got my little set of crowd there watching me. I got my coach. You know, you don't do anything right in the gym. You don't think about none of that. Like, it doesn't really bother you. It probably makes you thrive a bit more, you know.
So what are your plans for the rest of the year, then?
So I'll get just a quick little runabout fight out of the way. Just to get myself back into the little mix, and then I just want to go straight for the titles to be fair. Few things need changing in the team, and that's it.
So we'll be seeing the Magic Man, the Commonwealth champion, by this time next
year. Hopefully Commonwealth, or at least English title.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, unfortunately that's all we have time for with Zahid. Thank you very, very much for coming in.
No, thank you for having me here.
No, between Hanif and I, we both wish you nothing but the best, and you know, hopefully to see
you again
very
soon.
We'll keep an eye on you. We'll call you back in 12 months or so.
yeah, definitely. I'll come anytime.
And anytime we hear you fighting, we'll make sure we get your results out there and everything.
No, thank you. No problem. That's brilliant. All right. Good to know.
Ladies and gentlemen, we'll be right back.